You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Daredevil Born Again. I'm Born Again. I'm Alex.
I'm Born Again as Pete LePage.
I'm Pete?
No, yeah, you're Pete. That other guy is Justin, by the way.
Oh,
and we're going to be talking about Daredevil Born Again, Episode 7, Art for Art's Sake. If you haven't seen it on Disney Plus, turn away now because spoilers, but a bunch of stuff going on in this episode. The main thing is Muse identity is revealed as just a regular kid, Bastion Cooper.
It's crazy that it was the only other person in this television show that we hadn't seen anything.
Hold on. Let's lay off of the commentary for a second. He turns out to be, as expected, a patient of Heather Glenn, attacks her. She is, in fact, his muse. He wants to use her blood to make some more of his blood paint, but Daredevil stops him, or more specifically, Heather stops him by shooting him several times, just as the anti-vigilante task force arrives. Meanwhile, a couple of other things going on in this episode. Mayor Fisk is still wrestling with this whole being a mayor thing. Vanessa is making some big moves, ends up killing Luca at 33 Withers, one of the most dangerous restaurants in New York City that I think we could probably talk about.
Terrifying.
Looked like a nice restaurant.
And Daniel Blake makes BB an offer she can't refuse.
Oh, BB.
BB report. There you go. Also, Heather and Matt say I love you, and Cherry is there, and except not. I mean, kiss of killing somebody, I guess.
No, kiss of shower.
Yes. So probably the big thing to talk about here, to jump right into it,
is therapy.
Is therapy. How do you feel about therapy, Pete?
Well, I'm a little worried because this, Muse kind of says that therapy turned him into this. So I'm kind of a little concerned about the negative effects it'll have on the therapy community, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think this episode in particular is going to have negative effects on the therapy community. I have been surprised how they rolled out Muse in here. We've talked about this a bunch on the podcast, but to give the groundwork again, just in case this is somebody's first episode, in the comics, Muse is an Inhuman. He has the powers to absorb sensation. He fights Daredevil, and he gets super strength and super speed because of that. This is a very different take on Muse. I believe there was like one comic where Muse finally took off his mask, and he basically has the same face underneath, and it's just as horrifying.
Yes, yeah. Right.
Really upsetting. Here, he's your classic, like, incel-style kid. He was raised, it seems like they're certainly implying that, like, he was rich, disaffected, a sociopath, and ultimately decided to put on this costume and become Muse, drain people's blood for his art. He's saying he was inspired by Heather, but certainly it seems like he was inspired well before that as well in certain ways. And then ultimately, the most surprising thing, I think, is that he gets shot and killed at the end of this episode.
So pretty again, definitively.
Yes. Now, in the comics, again, because he has superpowers, and this happened relatively recently, he kills himself when he's fighting Daredevil's sidekick, Blindspot, It's revealed in the recent
Blind Spot. I miss Blind Spot.
Blind Spot's great. Recent miniseries, great miniseries, Daredevil Unleash Hell, that Muse went to hell and then comes back as a ghost to inhabit a art student named Morgan, gives her the same powers, kind of makes her a female Muse, but is also manipulating her and her body at the same time. That's in progress, so we'll see how that turns out. This show, and this is my take on it, maybe I'm wrong, maybe they'll go in different directions, but even though it exists in the MCU, and we've got magic, you know, magic that science or whatever.
Amulets. Yeah, magic jewelry.
We have magic amulets, but this is very ground level. Even with the mention of the magic amulet, White Tiger, we really only saw him as like a ground level superhero. We never saw him doing like crazy leaps or super strength or anything like that. And I don't think they're going to go that way in the show. I don't think they're suddenly going to be like, yes, Muse went to hell and now he's back.
I hope so.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So, surprising end for this character, I would say.
I don't think it's the end.
Really? You're putting your chip down on Muse Rises Again.
I do have some thoughts on that in a second, but first I want to hear what Justin is going to say.
I was going to say that it does feel like, I think we're a little biased because we, as comic readers, we like the Muse character. The Muse character is interesting, visual, scary, complicated, scary. Was setting up to be at least a mid-level rogues gallery villain for Daredevil in the comics. So super exciting. There was a lot of build up to Muse with the all the different stuff we saw, the graffiti, all of that, all around the city. It felt like this is the arrival of an epic villain. But I think that was perhaps our misjudgment and the show saying, like, it's doing what it's always said it's going to be, to set up Matt and Wilson Fisk as the two poles of this. They're fighting. The whole season has been slowly building them up against each other. Muse is just a side quest, and it felt like it wasn't for us. And I think this episode, top to bottom, was like, oh, this is more of a henchman type person, and was really the main function of Muse is to create the Wilson Fisk task force, which is now going to be targeting Daredevil. And so just a disposable piece when I think we thought it was something bigger than it actually is.
Yeah, it's tough when a show is like, calm down, nerds. You're not going to get the thing that you love from the comics.
I don't think I think that's a misjudgment of it because I don't think they want you to like go to bed. The opposite. They're like, hey, oh, this is an interesting character. How can we use this character to further the larger narrative we're trying to tell, which is Daredevil versus Thicke Wilson?
What, you know, I appreciate the Thicke Wilson reference. I do think, though, that it's tough because it's like, oh, you guys love Muse? And we're like, yeah, Muse is a fucking badass. Like, holy crap, what a villain. Like, Daredevil barely beat him. It was insane in the comics. And they're like, oh, if you love Muse, we're going to water him down, not give him as many powers, and it's just going to be a white dude who needs therapy but takes therapy the wrong way. Like, what? That's not... You know what I mean? Then give me a disposable henchman. Don't get me all excited about Muse and then underserve kind of some of the cool parts, aspects of this character.
But Muse is cool. Like the parts of it that are cool in this show. The blood paint, the epoxy, that stuff's cool. That's interesting. The great details for this. And then I think it was just the story. They're like, well, this is the last episode we're going to use Muse, so we need to wrap it up. So let's go with a simpler idea. He's just a disaffected
I get it. Like, Kingpin is amazing in this show, and I do want great Kingpin scenes, and like some of the stuff in this episode was amazing with Kingpin, and I'm glad that we're kind of spending so much time with Kingpin. It's, you know, unbelievably acted, really well shot and performed, but it was tough because I really was like, oh, dude, Muse is a sick villain. So I felt like a little disheartened by the whole kind of what we got versus what we were expecting a little bit.
The thing with an episode like this, the only way they could put more Muse in is to cut out some of the other stuff that's equally important to us, like 90s-style shower sex scenes from a show like Silk Stockings or other Saturday
sick
Night.
Sick reference, bro. Fair. Sick reference, dude.
There's no way we could get a saxophone-heavy softcore pornography scene in this episode if we're going to be featuring Muse.
Yeah, so I guess you got to choose your – all right, fine. But
Use your muse.
Yeah, and this is, to be clear, not even softcore pornography. This is like feather pillow pornography at best.
What? Oh, that saying. The old famous feather pillow pornography.
I'm trying to think about what is crazy soft. What is a crazy soft? Marshmallow pornography.
Here's the thing. A lot of people talk about it. Like, oh, I love a feather pillow. Feathers? Sharp. You catch one of those the wrong way, you're eyeless. You're eyeless for the rest of your life.
They keep coming out of the pillow, too.
That's what I'm saying. Get out of your feathers.
I don't know how anybody sleeps with that chicken going crazy in that pillowcase.
That's exactly right. Where do you think the feathers come from? That's the most old-timey shit that we still do.
You keep the chicken in there?
Yeah,
where you need to refresh the feathers.
You put a chicken in a pillowcase, and then you put your head down on it, and it's going back, back, back all night long.
Wow.
Yeah, God, it keeps me up. Keeps me up so late, my chatty chickens. And I have a rooster pillow that's really angry.
That's a horrible idea. Yeah, in the morning, that's going to be rough, dude.
Here's my deal that I think I'm like,
don't. Sorry.
Halfway between you guys and the whole Muse thing, I hear you, Justin, on keeping it focused on Daredevil and Kingpin. I think that's absolutely what the show should do.
Yes.
I'll also laud it for coming out in a surprising direction with Heather. We've said pretty much since her introduction that she was set up to die. This entire episode, I felt like, oh, this is it. Here she goes. Yeah. She's going to die.
She's out.
And they're 100%. Playing with that. But instead, they give a very surprising direction for her going forward where, and we'll see what happens, but she's been obsessed with vigilantes. She talks about it. She's interested in writing a book about it. Now she kind of is that. What does that do to her going forward? I think that adds layers to that character that are going to be fascinating to play with. My issue is like sort of the center of what happens in this episode, which is the reveal of who Muse is, which brought him down to the level of SVU villain rather than this very elevated, very arch Marvel Comics villain that we're used to. So I know I said this, I think, the last episode. I don't need the superpowers. I don't need him to be an inhuman. I don't need the absorbing of sensation or anything like that. But it brings him down to a level that I feel like is not quite up to what the character could be. And I don't know.
And even what the show set him up to be, like it went from this very interesting, perhaps character villain motivated by something else, not just like I'm cliche, quote unquote, crazy, and I'm here to be obsessed. Which, like, simultaneously came out of nowhere and then was dispensed with very quickly in that sort of shorthand they do on a procedural where it's like, yeah, you know, I'm obsessed with you. And, oh, you probably are looking for your way out right now. And I was like, come on, don't do that. Like, this character could easily be – I feel like he treats in the comics, in the core of the character, treats humans like his paint supplies. And, like
– And we all know paint's expensive, so using your own blood and stuff like that is just
exactly.
smart.
Yeah, and what a great source, because that'll keep him painting. He's using, you know, large murals, so, like, he's got to get that extra paint in there.
I want to go back to something.
By the way, like,
Alex
little
said.
Sidebar here, I just want to mention this came up in our Discord, and apologies, I don't remember who put it there. I could probably check in a second, but the murals were designed on art by Michael Lark, right, who is an amazing Marvel Comics
artist. David Mack?
Oh, no, it was David Mack. I'm so sorry. Yes, it was David Mack. Amazing artist, really well known for his Daredevil work, so that's really cool. Mm-hmm. My guess, based on, you know, I was kind of slagging them off a little bit, is like promotional artwork. My guess is they took David Mack's art and then, through production design, made it work for the murals that were actually going to go outside that they were going to put up there. So there are probably some tweaks and changes there, but that's pretty cool, and I'm glad David Mack got some work.
And we saw a lot of David Mack artwork in here, and artwork that is so good, so perfectly proportioned to Heather's face that Daredevil is able to read it with his skin.
It's
and you know, that's the side of a true artist. I actually got into a little bit of trouble because I was touching a photograph of my wife, and I started to kiss it because I assumed it was her. It was so good.
Man, that's gotta be tough.
Fooled by the painting.
Wow. And that was an interesting moment when he was kind of like looking over the – and he passed by the first one, and I was like, oh, God, he's blind. He can't see what's on there. But then luckily, because of the blood and maybe the bumps that he uses, he was able to really – yeah, so I got – it was a kind of an emotional roller coaster. I was like, he's not going to know what's on the pages. But he did. So if, luckily, some of them were bumpier.
But if you do think, if Heather does die at some point later on, do you think Matt will start taking Feathercore showers with those paintings instead?
Definitely. Kind of play talk about this idea of, because the show plays it up like, oh man, you know, what if she's gonna die? And I was like, oh man, what would that do to Matt? Like the fact that he lost Foggy, you know, like now, you know, his girlfriend right after he said I love you, and I was like, oh, that's gonna really spin him out. But interesting the fact that she did, but that where they cut her open, that was so gross. And they like zoomed in. I was like, guys, we don't need to be this close for this. This is really intense.
And I feel like you could tell it was excruciating. You could tell they were like, well, we can't show it now because it would be too horrifying. Like they were purposely not. He cut her. We saw it very up close. Then we didn't look back until later on because they were like, this is too fucked up. We can't show this. Maybe they got pushed back. This is a show on Disney Plus. Famously, like, don't show stuff. And this show is like, we're showing stuff. And that means sex. And that means like longitudinal cuts on arms.
I do have two things just looking at my notes here. We'll get back. Oh, did you want to say?
Jaron Townsend was the Discord post.
And I'll also mention, if we have a little time at the end here, we've been getting some really awesome letters from folks on a bunch of different platforms about this show. I probably should have been reading them all along. I haven't been, but based on time, we'll get to like a little bit of a mailbag at the end here. I just wanted to mention two things while I remember them looking at my notes here. One, I thought it was very funny, and obviously it played last episode, but Bastion being like, oh, I studied Taekwondo, and then it was like, oh, is that going to pay off in 10 minutes, you think?
I was like, guys, we get it. Don't need to sell it this hard. We've already seen
Coach
him fight.
Lee, though, you know what I mean?
I was like he's Taekwondo. He's like, he's very good. And with plus also it's where they're cross-cutting to like the cop who we've established is probably a much bigger character that's been cut down at her role. And she's like, yeah, he was really good at Taekwondo, like scary good, like so good that his coach ended up dead. But his coach was really good, too. And his coach taught him he was really good. He's really good at Taekwondo.
Fisk is like, the other thing, him, his nose bleeding and then him drawing the whole Muse face in his blood. Oh. Like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot of blood coming out of your nose there, buddy.
Here's one thing about that. Yesterday I went running and I got a nosebleed.
Oh, no.
And this is right after
I
watched.
Did you want to turn into Muse immediately?
Well, or? It was right after I watched Daredevil. I watched this episode and I was like, my nose is bleeding. I was like, oh, this is just like, I'm just like Muse. And then it wouldn't stop bleeding and I was literally covered in blood on my, my shirt was like covered in blood on the way. But I was like, oh, I'm too far away to like stop and fix this. And I was like, you know what? That shit is real.
Have you murdered your therapist yet? Like, where are you on the Muse journey?
I don't have a Muse yet, you know? Because that's the thing. You just got to wait for your Muse to find you.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. So you're one part closer to Muse.
Yeah, I just, I'm too set up, you know, I'm too stabilized for therapy. Like, I don't need it. You know?
So to give Pete a little bit of hope, I do want to throw two things out there and put a potential spoiler warning for season two of Daredevil Born Again. First of all, we already know that Eldon Henson is coming back for season two, right? So if they are bringing back a dead character, it's possible they could bring back more dead characters through a vision or a flashback or otherwise or something like that. The other thing, I don't know the exact date on this, but there was somebody who has been trolling the sets here in New York and like taking pictures of everybody on set and taking pictures of the trailers. On March 11th, when they had just started filming season two, they took a picture of a trailer that said Stunt Muse on it. So it's possible they might have been doing some pickup shots for this, potentially, I guess. But it also seems like there may be somebody dressed as Muse in season two. So to throw out possibilities, I don't think it's Bastion Cooper played by Hunter Doohan coming back to life or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder, this is like crazy speculation here. I wonder if the journey Heather is on is like her brain breaks because of this and she starts dressing as Muse in season two.
Oh, whoa.
And becomes a new version of the character.
And a ghost Muse situation, right? Where like the dead Muse haunts her body, like in the comics.
Maybe. Not like literally.
You're talking a psychological haunting.
Yes, a psychological haunting. Exactly.
Oh, not an actual.
Which I think would be kind of neat. And that ties into something, I'm definitely getting his name wrong, but the showrunner Dario Scarpardone, Scarpardane, I think. He had a quote preseason where somebody asked them about Muse in season two, and he's like, "Well, let me just say this: and I'm probably even getting into spoilers here, but the impact of Muse is definitely felt throughout the two seasons, and people are like, oh shit, Muse is coming back for season two. But I think now we know what that means is the repercussions for Wilson Fisk, for Daredevil, and I think also for Heather as well.
Yeah. I want to talk about Heather a little bit here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because she comes, you know, she's in the hospital and then she wakes up and she was like, I had to shoot him. And he was like, oh yeah, I know. I was like, whoa, that's an interesting thing to kind of say, and especially right after you wake up, you know.
I don't shoot him.
Yeah, 90%. This is a true statistic. 90% of the people who wake up in hospitals, first thing they say is, I had to shoot him.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes more sense then, because I was a little – and then he was like, yeah. I mean, because that really revealed a little bit of like, I know you were there. And confirmed, yeah, I was there. Because instead of him being like, what are you talking about? I wasn't in the room. I don't know what you're saying. He was like, oh, yeah, I know you did. I know you had to do it. And I was like, you didn't. You were fighting him. It seemed like you had it handled.
Well, okay.
You think he didn't hear the story?
Yeah, cinema sins. I think there was a news report or something like that. We're okay.
Yeah, come on. The BB report or perhaps New York One and all the other majors. New York One is referred to as the exclusive news network in New York City, which I thought was very funny.
I kind of think, you know, it is the...
Shout out to Pat Kiernan.
Yeah, a lot of New York One is rising. It's like going to become the mega corporation of the MCU eventually that someone has to take down.
You want to talk about the BB report? You brought
it up. Here's a pitch for you, Pete. Maybe you're right. Maybe Muse will then be Muse's soul will overtake Heather's. Mm-hmm. And like we talked about Ellen Henson coming back, maybe Foggy's soul will overtake Matt, and they can fuck in the shower just like you've always wanted. Foggy Muse.
That's the real shower scene that we all wanted.
Things are getting real muggy in this shower. Hashtag muggy.
I want every episode of Daredevil to have an extended shower scene just like this one. And justify it. Just be like, these two characters are getting their shower on.
Yeah. Next episode, Frank Castle and Matt Murdock get in the shower. And like, it starts
Matt.
To keep things quiet, but... it gets pretty heated. All right,
I want to talk about Kingpin.
Hey,
you're
one bad day from a shower like this. Just want to say that. Check you later.
Kingpin was really, like, his kind of, like, wry smile in this episode was really hilarious. Like, when they hold up the Muse mask and he tries the smile for the camera, it was hilarious. When he was kind of, like, looking at dead Muse, he had, like, a real authentic smile, which I thought was very interesting and well done. And then his like almost getting murdered by his wife and then being like, hey, call Karen, ask if she wants any leftovers or whatever. I was like, God damn, dude, that is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
He wasn't almost killed by his wife, though, right?
No, she texted Luca and was like, yo, he's alone. This is where he is. And Luca showed up and then.
No, that's. I think they worked on that together. I don't think that was
you
Vanessa.
Think Kingpin and Vanessa planned that?
Yeah,
to kill Luca.
Yeah, to take out Luca. That was my take on it.
Oh, interesting.
I thought it more in line with Pete's take. I thought it. I mean,
she met Luca alone and was like, you know, and then she was like alone by herself, and Kingpin's out having dinner without her. I was like, yo, dude, they're kind of drifting apart here.
I guess we'll find out. I think the real killer in that scene is all those sausages he's eating. This guy's out of control.
Too many sausages.
What do you mean too many sausages? There's not too many sausages.
There's no such thing.
Yeah,
I just think with him being free, well, I guess I think it's more interesting because there's breadcrumbs leading to either of these paths, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like there's been a lot of pressure from Vanessa to be like, stop doing this. Let's go do crime. And so like, I don't know. And he seems to be succeeding doing what he's doing. So it made more sense to me that Vanessa would be like, you know what? I like Adam anyway. I want to kill
Dungeon Boy.
Dungeon Boy. I want to kill Fisk. I'll use Luca to do it. And Kingpin is just on it. because he doesn't trust anybody. Boom. Mm. And that's why I also think the sausage, he's in his dungeon, he's eating what he wants to eat. It felt like it was the freedom.
It wasn't a dungeon, it was the restaurant. He was at a restaurant.
I guess we'll see. That feels like, to me, that feels like a big move from Vanessa, which would lead to a all-out gang war. And that's not... It feels like a cold war between them. We'll see how it goes, you know, obviously in subsequent episodes. But to me, it feels like, yeah, there is this fraction because of Adam, but she really wants to be with Wilson. She wants to be own independent crime boss, but she also, yeah, I think she does want to be with him. I don't know.
Maybe you believe in love.
Romantic at heart.
You truly are with all these lovers in the show. The show's about lovers. Yeah, I guess what I'm saying, though. Lovers.
That's if what the they bumper were, sticker says.
If they were just trying to kill Luca, there are a million other ways to do it than the way they went down. Like, wait till he gets in the room with Wilson to kill him. I was like, you could have killed him in your meeting in Red Hook, yeah, where all the corpses are stacked.
I mean, you guys are talking about the shows about lovers, but the love relationship that I'm not buying is Matt and the therapist. You know what I mean? Like, she was like, I love you. And he was like, I love you. I was like, doesn't feel like either one of them mean
that. Did you say, like, Lerv or something like that? And she's like, wait, did you just say Lerv?
Did you just stutter?
Yeah.
That counts.
No. It doesn't count. I said what I said.
I don't buy it.
Interesting.
Well, you know, it is, I sort of like Alex's theory because not that I don't think these characters love each other. I think they do. I just, this relationship doesn't feel rushed. Quite right. Something. And so I don't know.
Do you know what it is? And I think they're purposely doing this. I don't think there's a lot of heat for the relationship despite the very sexy shower scene. Mm-hmm. It's an adult relationship where they like each other.
Busy.
Yes, they like, they have a lot of stuff to do, but I don't think it's not the same sort of like powerful heat that, say, we got from Daredevil and Karen Page previously, Daredevil and Elektra.
Daredevil and She-Hulk.
Which ran hot. Like, that was tied into his Daredevil life. This is tied into his lawyer life, which is more appropriate. It's more above the board.
Well, that's a nice way of looking at it, but you could also say that he's constantly lying to her, misleading her, and sure. Not responding when she's like, hey, I want to go after Mass. He's like, cool, very cool. I'm like,
yeah, no. I already said that, an adult relationship.
yeah, exactly. So all the scenes that were meant to be like their like cute relationship scenes are a hotbed of him keep burying secrets deeper, whether it's Daredevil, Foggy, regular law stuff. I'm like, bro, what's the relationship here? So, like, that to me is why the relationship seems broke.
What was interesting to me is that she said when Muse was attacking her that, like, you know, cowards wear masks. And I feel like that was a key thing to say because if she finds out who Matt is, you know what I mean, that might really have a negative effect.
Yeah, and I think that's coming at some point.
Yeah.
Though obviously we were wrong about her dying, so we'll see.
She becomes Muse. She becomes Muse. I bet she uses no mask. Just what do you bloody think, eyes.
What do you think the BB report is going to do? You know, the stick or the carrot? Where do you think she's going to land on that? That was a heck of a scene, huh?
Yeah. I don't know. I think the big thing that I took away from there is I love the development of Daniel Blake, seeing him go from like, hey, I'm here, I'm just a regular guy, I love you, Wilson Fisk, to the way they're slowly building up him feeling his own power in this space is really fascinating. And I love the way Michael Gandolfini is playing it. I also think he's very funny. The moment at the beginning where Fisk
the Starbucks.
Like, yes, Fisk is like, what do you see out the window? And he's like, Starbucks?
Starbucks?
He's like, voters. Yeah. He's like, voters? He has these little one-word offhand things in almost every episode that are laugh-out-loud funny. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
He's great.
Very funny. But yeah, I agree. He's great. The arc is interesting because we have Fisk has his like number one capo. That's the dude who pulled the trigger on Luca.
His name is Buck.
So. Buck. Yeah,
Buck. Yeah.
Every time I heard about Buck, I'm like, that's not his name.
Every episode I forget his name until they mention it out loud and I'm like, that can't be right.
Buck? I don't think so. I don't know a lot of Bucks in New York City.
Buck. Yeah.
No, he does not look like a Buck. But also it's just funny. It's like, well, we got Buck, Blake, and Fisk. All these characters working together. BB, Buck, Blake, and Fisk.
BB also great in this. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But the scene where she, like the emotions on her face, really impressive. She got to kind of really shine in this episode acting-wise, I felt like. And I'm wondering which way she's going to go, you know?
And that's Pete's report on the BB report. Take it away, yeah. Justin.
The PL on the BB. What I was going to say is the Gandolfini character, the Blake, it feels like Wilson has his capo. Like, what's his? It feels like he's being built to challenge Fisk potentially and maybe break off or become something else, because we see him gathering power quickly. And will that be
in
enough?
The chair.
He doesn't have right-hand man energy in this episode. He has power broker, making moves guy. So I feel like eventually he'll want to move around Fisk, whether it's in the politics side or in the crime side, maybe.
Yeah, I could definitely see it getting to that level, but we've mentioned this before. I think the very clear thing that they're doing here is people in Trump's orbit who rise in confidence as they go, that they come from this place of being absolute garbage, nothing people to, he brings them in and he brings them into his, you know, no, they Corbin. Are like they, yeah. oh. and know, then they are completely elevated to a national stage in a way where they probably shouldn't be. And they just start flexing at a certain point, whether it will pan out for him, like you're saying, Justin, or not, we'll definitely see in subsequent episodes, I'm sure. But I think that's the place that it is right now. Like, he's at the place where he's really feeling himself and he's making his own moves, whether that's going to run him in conflict with Fisk or not, I don't know. I'm still mildly convinced of my Daniel Blake is Fisk's secret child theory, but I don't think there's any evidence for that necessarily in this episode.
No, I don't think so. And I don't know what that would mean. Unless we do get into a Vanessa Wilson all-out war, and he's somehow caught in the middle, I think that could make sense. But or maybe is it him, Buck versus Blake, to be the number one capo?
Buck or Blake? Buck or Blake?
Which team are you, dude? Team Buck?
I'm going to go with the team that they're the same person, basically.
Oh, man.
So why draw the line?
I can see. I mean, this is wildly speculating.
When you think about it.
But I could see a late in the game revelation that Blake is Fisk's son and then Fisk taking him out just to once again show us how evil and irredeemable Wilson Fisk is. I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe.
I just think that, you know, half of Blake is going to be like, hey, you know, the on the BB report in a bad way in the next episode. So I don't think it's going to go well. And, you know, the boss man is not going to be happy about it.
I guess we'll see. It's just with the son revelation, it's sort of like he wants to be his son. To him, be like, actually, you are. He'd be like, sick. Continue the story.
Well, there could be. I mean, I don't know how heavily they're going to lead into this, but Wilson Fisk's backstory in the MCU is he killed his own dad. So there could be some kind of thing like Daniel Blake. Again, I'm just like writing.
Yeah, you're saying.
I'm just saying.
You got a little confident with your Heather Muse call, and now you're just like railing.
No, this is all speculation. If it's wildly off, I don't care. But I could see a world where Daniel Blake is forced into a situation where he has to kill Fisk, and Fisk is like, you couldn't do it. You couldn't kill me, so I'm going to kill you. And that's he couldn't step up in the same way that Wilson stepped up to his own dad. But I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting. Interesting idea.
Yeah, just wild speculation. What else in the episode? Anything else we should talk about here?
I don't have anything else. I just, I'm excited to see what's going to happen next.
All right. Oh, go ahead, Justin.
I was going to say, Cherry continues to be, there's a quick little scene here where Cherry's like, what are you doing, bro? And he's like, Matt's like, I need privacy. So they go in the glass room in the center of the office and have a big debate about how he's there.
Anybody who's worked in an office knows sound doesn't get out of the glass room.
That's right.
Exactly. So I'm curious. Cherry's doing a little bit of what Foggy always used to do, like being like, guy, you can't do this. But like, he also is like, I don't care. I guess go do it. So I want to know more of what Cherry's meant to be here, and hopefully not just a corpse.
Also, is it Kristen Tristan, I'm not sure, but she
Kirsten McDuffie.
Yeah, thank you. She's getting upset. And yeah, you can't keep her outside. You got to let her in the circle.
I want a little more of her. She's a good character in the comics too. And I feel like she is just going away as the season continues.
Well, she literally was just like, hey guys, can I talk to you? And they're like, not now. And then they just blow past her. I was like, that's the most sidelined you could be on a television show.
Yeah, 100%. So we need a little more of her, and we need a little more on Sherry and also all of the other characters. A
lot of characters in this season. So, and there's only two eps left.
I know. Ooh, very exciting. All right. Before we get to our vision board, since we have a little bit of time here, I'm going to run through some of the mailbag stuff that we've gotten. And these are going back a couple of episodes. Chad Post on our Patreon. This is about Latvian Heritage Day, Latvian singers. He says, my wife is Latvian and now super annoyed at me for making her watch all these clips. But if you're curious, the folk costumes are legit. I've been to a number of Latvian celebrations, Independence Day, Song and Dance Festival, not this made up heritage shit. I could attest to that. The accent, nope, that's so balky. And wow. Pete, you love balky. So
you balky.
And also, the singers must have been real Latvians, and the attorney's name is also Latvian. So random. Which I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah, that is cool. Thank you, Post, for sharing that.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you think they landed on the Latvian festival?
I think it's
very specific.
I think probably it is for the specificity of the joke would be my take on it. And also the fact that there is not a real holiday, so they don't risk upsetting anybody necessarily. That's my thought on it.
But interesting.
Interesting.
Let's see. Damien O'Connell on Spotify talking about the last episode, two episodes ago, I guess, but last week we had a big conversation about the Jew celebrating Christmas line. He says, I'm not too sure about, quote, a Jew celebrating Christmas, but a hardcore North Irish Protestant traditionally wouldn't celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Yes,
he is the saint of Ireland and North Ireland in part of the UK. The Protestants identify as Brits and Catholics, and Irish in the past hated them. This has changed over the past 30 odd years. I did like the penguin joke. Cool. There was a lot of discussion on our Discord about that as well, but I thought that was a neat.
Yeah, that is interesting, and something I hadn't considered, that there is a pretty strong split in Irish culture there, you can – the Troubles, famously.
Yes, but I will, as a Jew, dive down on – we do not regularly in New York say, like a Jew celebrating Christmas. That is not a thing that happens. The other side, cool. Thank you for clarifying, but this part, not.
Well, maybe it's in other circles that we don't travel in, you know?
Sure. Yeah, we should travel in other circles. You got to hear all viewpoints.
I'm going to start saying that around the city and see whose ears perk up.
Especially right now, just please.
Don't. Maybe not right now.
Maybe not right now. Maybe not. Maybe this.
But
isn't
Daredevil told me to.
Oh no!
As Daredevil
famous
always
last
says,
words.
I'm the muse for saying like a Jew celebrating Christmas around the city.
Going back to the third episode where White Tiger died, I know we were very positive about that, and I saw a lot of people positive, but Derek on our Discord had a very different take that I thought was really interesting. So I know this is coming late here on this one, but he says, I knew we were in trouble in that first scene in prison when Hector starts waxing nostalgic from the homeland. I'm paraphrasing here, but he misses the white sand, the palm trees, and a specific species of frog. So after first describing the island to the most generic terms possible, we get one random, weirdly specific detail. It feels like the result of a Google search. It would be like if a New Yorker said, I miss the buildings, the alleyways, the cooing of the homing pigeons. The real problem, though, is that his most important character trait here seems to be the fact that he's Puerto Rican. For the record, I'm half Boricua. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that myself. Side characters defined by their ethnicity. What am I watching? Law and Order? I had a lot more to say on it. But I thought, I don't want to speak for you guys. I'm certainly not of Puerto Rican descent. So it was very interesting to hear that deferring perspective on that.
Well, I would say sort of similar to our conversation about Muse in the episode we talked about today, like it feels like there's a little bit of that just like shorthanding that happened with White Tiger in general. And, you know, you want everybody to get to not just nail one Googled specific at the end so you can have a soundbite for the credits. You want the characters to be fully fleshed out and detail oriented, especially when it made so much of White Tiger's Puerto Rican heritage. To put that on display and then sort of not back it up with a rich character underneath it is a bummer. And, you know, that's just what happens on TV a lot.
Yeah. One thing, I mean, as a little bit of a side note that I don't think we've talked about here on the podcast, but Hector's niece, Angela, also becomes White Tiger in the comic books, and everybody kind of assumes that's what she's being set up for. So I wonder if they sort of like rushed through the broad exposition of Hector Ayala so that they could eventually get to Angela as perhaps a more nuanced portrayal. But I guess we'll see.
Hopefully. Yeah.
That would be cool. We got a pretty long one here, so I'm going to paraphrase for the most part. But this is E sent us on email. Said this was specifically to us being like, I don't know how much this tracks as a criminal defense attorney. So he says, first time writing in, but you asked on a recent Daredevil episode pod for a criminal defense attorney to chime in on how real the trial is. As you would expect, not very real, but I agree it works well for the show and is better than a lot of shows do. I've been a criminal defense attorney for 10 years and a prosecutor before that, so I know what's what in a criminal trial.
Seen some shit.
Yeah, the biggest thing here is that the witness not showing up recanting on the stand should not have been as big of an issue as it was. The move there, if you have a witness like that, is to depose him beforehand or at the very least have him do a recorded interview with her investigator. After he recanted on the stand, Matt should have immediately called the PI and had him testify as an impeachment witness, said what the guy told him prior to the trial and hopefully had it on video or a signed written statement. Of course, that's not as good as having the guy tell the truth in the first place. Or maybe since he was obviously struggling to answer, maybe better. But that's the move here and why you do a pretrial interview with your investigator. He's got the investigator running around doing shady car tricks and giving him drugs. Makes no sense that he didn't record his statement prior to the trial. There's a couple of other things there, but I want to skip to a follow-up for the Latvian episode as well that I thought was interesting. And apologies, E, for skipping the rest of your email there. There was more great stuff. But he says, I'll add in the most recent episode was very realistic. I also get appointed work on low-level stuff while working big cases. And I think it was Justin who was shocked at how the pre-trial cattle call docket was all about Matt flirting with the DA. Well, let me tell you, it may not always look like that, but 90% of low-level criminal cases resolve based on how well the DA and defense counsel can get along. Sometimes it's flirty. Sometimes it's, hey, did you see that game last night, etc. But that's how the system really works most of the time. While the client of the case is morally correct that the system is wrong and bad, I'm screaming at my TV, take the 3 days. So there you go. And he did have one additional note that he said he keeps coming back to, is that so much of the job these days, and I am paraphrasing here, is watching body cameras and dash cameras. And he's really wondering how Daredevil, Matt Murdock, a guy who can't see, deals with that because he literally cannot see the evidence that's going on there. So
that's an interesting take. Well. That's something this show won't touch on.
I don't think so.
I will say there's a lot of stuff there. Really great email. Thanks for sending it in, E. On the flirtation part, I mean, I was calling out, I was like, the zero to like, we're about to start making out level of their flirtation. I was like, this feels strange to do in the middle of a courtroom. But I will say, I got a speeding ticket last year.
What?
And you know, some people were like, oh, you should get a lawyer. I was like, yeah, no, let me try something. And by calling and emailing and doing the right amount of contact with people, resolved it just by person-to-person, like, talking to people.
Did you have
and
the flirt? Do think,
no flirting. Justin Showers? That would get you into more trouble in reality.
Justin called up a bunch of lawyers, slept with all of them. They were unrelated, but just in case.
Yeah, it's all around the country. I don't know. I was just trying to figure it out. Hey, can you call? Don't tell my. Then now I have divorce lawyers to deal with because I got cheating with so many times with other lawyers.
Yes.
But no, like I do think there's a real reality to like actually talking to people in a world where people are getting worse at doing that is actually increasingly valuable.
Well, I also think that's like, how much time do you want to put in versus how much is the ticket? You know what I mean? Of like, what's the ratio of like, you know, if you got a call and kind of get kicked around. And
you Pete, know. You're being tried for murder. So, like, I think put the time in. Like, it's not call it just a ticket, but it's sort of a pretty extreme
ticket.
Well,
I was just saying, in your speeding ticket, you know what I mean? Like,
your murder trial, you really should.
You should feel like it's going to be fine.
I got this murder ticket on my desk.
Shower scenes. It's going to be cool. It's going to be really, it's going to be great.
Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in.
Yeah,
really appreciate it. This is great. I love how thoughtful everybody is being at the show, too. It's really awesome to see. Before we wrap up here, why don't we go to our vision board, though? We got two episodes left. We've got the penultimate episode next week. What are you guys looking forward to? What do you want to see in probably the cliffhanger episode of the season, most likely?
I feel like we're going to get the Task Force versus Daredevil.
Yes.
I also would love to see another sit down with King. I've said this before, another sit down with Matt and Kingpin now that Kingpin knows. You know what I mean? Like, I'm surprised he doesn't want to talk to him. Like, hey, bro, you're fucking up. And then maybe Matt can be like, yeah, what about that dude in your dungeon?
I bet we get that. I bet that's how the final episode kicks off, I had to predict. Like, we get another diner confab for them to really set up the finale rack for the season. But I agree with you, Pete. I think next episode is going to be Daredevil versus the Task Force. I think it's going to get nasty. He's going to be doing a lot of punching and then yelling and then punching more and then yelling.
Oh, yeah. You gotta yell, though. You know what I mean?
Two missing pieces. I feel like Cole is a character that has been established. I'm curious how he's going to play out. Mm-hmm. He does seem like he is a bit of a leader in the task force, but I don't know if he's a bad guy. So yeah, that's interesting.
This might be our comic book heads playing in, like we talked about last episode, where he goes head to head with Daredevil, but ultimately is a good guy who ends up helping him out. So I do hope that's the direction
we're
heading.
I bet that's
in.
What's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to be one guy that Daredevil doesn't beat up. And the other factor that I feel like I don't know why we haven't gotten more of is the Punisher. Mm-hmm. Like, we went way out of our way to establish a little hang there. And there was a little bit of philosophizing that I think is thematic in the show. But
I wonder if that's,
I feel like he needs to be back.
Well, to take down the task force, maybe he needs the Punisher and is going to team up with him. You know what I mean?
Well, we have this unresolved tattoo. All that stuff has been just very low simmer right now. I feel like the task force, we haven't really seen much of the Punisher tattoo stuff on this task force because they've been branded as the thin, dark line, I think they're called episode. So, like, the Punisher tattoo stuff feels now less important, but, like, I actually want it to be more important. And maybe that's going to be a secret army or something like that.
I think we will see him again. I definitely have been seeing him a lot in those ads for The Accountant 2 that have been showing up, which is pretty weird because he's basically the same character there. It's a movie. It's the Ben Affleck movie.
I know what you're talking about, but you're comparing the Punisher to an accountant?
The Accountant.
No. In The Accountant, spoiler.
I've seen the movie, Jake.
John Bernthal's in it, and he plays basically the Punisher.
No, that's not true.
Why are you mad? I don't know why you're mad about this. This feels like something
you can't
would be
compare,
happy about.
Like, just what? That's just ridiculous. It's upsetting on many levels.
I apologize. I apologize for bringing up The Accountant to your favorite movie. I want to see what's going on with B.B. Urich, actually. Yeah. I feel like the thing is, speaking of Backburner, we haven't seen anything about her and Ben Urich since pretty much the beginning of the season, and there's got to be something there.
Also, the whole episode, we didn't get any BB reports. Almost every episode, we've gotten a BB report, and I feel like this next episode is going to start with her kind of big reaction to.
Do you think she's going to ask people about, like, how pizza tastes or other hard-hitting journalism?
She's going to be like, stick her the carrot. Which one should you pick? You know what I mean?
She's going to be like, here's my groundbreaking news.
Eating carrots, but I also kind of like chewing on sticks. They're good for my teeth.
Both good for your eyes. Yeah. It's going to be someone on the street being like, okay, big revelation. Hey, rats are crazy because they eat garbage. And then that's going to be the end. It's like, oh, okay. Not sure what the function of this is. I actually do think the BB report is going to be, I think the reason we don't know anything about her is because she's been secretly investigating the Fisk mayoral institution. And it's going to be a big surprise, the big twist coming for that.
We will definitely see. Like we said, we have 2 episodes left. Very excited to check them out. And please keep sending in those letters and thoughts.
Yeah, appreciate
I'd love to
it.
Do more mailbag in future episodes. You can support this podcast on patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Daredevil. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
I just got to go jump in the shower. You think anyone's going to be in there? Who do you think is going to be in there?
Well, you got to get the blood out first, and then people show up. You know
yeah,
I mean?
I'm still covered in blood from my run. Thank you for saying
that. As your attorney, I got to advise you to stop saying that. It ties into your trial.
Yeah, your murder ticket trial.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You've created a cool indoor retreat. Now let Mountain Air Comfort Systems provide the quiet and energy-efficient comfort you can depend on. With a range of innovative cooling solutions like the Carrier Infinity Heat Pump that delivers premium home heating and cooling performance. Learn more at MountainAirMobile.com. You make it a home. Let Mountain Air Comfort Systems make it more comfortable. Rebates, incentives, and financing are available for a limited time. Mountain Air Comfort Systems and Carrier. Turn to the experts.